One was hearings, and one was
The hearings issue we're really going to talk about soon. This was last week, so the question was, if you have let's get back into it. Let's slow that down. Okay, so last week, let's go over, we learned section 2 on page 3, which was really section 3 was supposed to be. Klishim lachto le'isser, those types of utensils whose primary function is for a prohibited activity, and therefore Chazal prohibited us from moving them, considered them all to be muksa. The hammer, the screwdriver were our primary examples, that which you primarily use them for something prohibited. They have some permitted usages, but since they're primarily used for something which is prohibited, therefore it is under the category of muksa. Now we mentioned last week that because this particular category is unique in that it is, there are certain leniencies, those of tzorach gufo and tzorach makomo. If you need to move it for it itself, or you need to move it because you need its place, all of those utensils which are classified as something which is a klishim lachto l'isser, that which is primarily used for something prohibited, you are allowed to move. So we said, for example, the hammer, if you need it to crack open a coconut or you need it to crack open a nut, so since the only reason why it's prohibited is because its primary usage is for something prohibited, you're allowed to take your hammer and move it to crack open whatever purpose that you have. Or if it's in the way and you need to move it, it's on your svarim shelf and you need to get to a safer behind it, you're allowed to move any one of these particular objects in order to get to what it is that you need. So we ran through section B, all the applications last week. We'll just quickly run through some of them again. Some of the ones that come up more often, candlesticks or menorahs. So for example, those items which were not lit, they're just in your brake front or wherever you keep them, so they are classified as a klishim lachto l'isser. They are primarily used for prohibited activity on Shabbos, that being lighting candles. So, but if you need its place, you're allowed to move it. So if it's in the way of a kiddush cup and it's sitting there and you need to move it, you're allowed to move that because the only reason why it's muksa is because it's a klishim lachto l'isser and you need its place, so you're allowed to move that. Similarly, like calculators, radios, flashlights, all of those things, electric clocks, fans, electric blankets, all of those things you can't move just for the sake of moving to protect it or if it was left outside, but all of those things, if you need it, or you need its place, you can move it. So we spoke out last week. You could turn a clock if you need to be able to see it at night. You could turn a fan either towards you or away from you. All of those things are considered a klishim lachto l'isser, utensil whose primary usage is something prohibited. But if you need it, so as long as you're not going to take the plug out while you're moving it, which usually you wouldn't, you're allowed to adjust the clock, adjust the fan, or sleep on a blanket. That was one of the questions we had also. A electric blanket are all permitted to be done on Shabbos. Now, H was where we had the question last week, car keys. So, a car key that's for ignition purposes, your ignition key is prohibited because that's a klishim lachto l'isser. Its primary function is to turn on your car, which you're obviously not allowed to do on Shabbos. The question was, what if it's on a key ring with a bunch of other keys? So we're going to talk about them when we learn about buses, that which is considered a base for permitted and prohibited items. We'll talk about them more, but the short of it is, the way that you establish when you have a bus is, let's say you have a key ring, and you have your house key, and you have your car key both on it. So your house key is permitted, you're allowed to carry that on Shabbos, assuming you have an Erev, and your car key is a klishim lachto l'isser. So the way that you determine the status of the key ring is by which one is considered more choshev, which one is more important or critical as far as this key ring goes. And as we'll learn when we discuss Hilchos Basis, we don't determine that based on the value of whether or not your house or your car. We base on which one you need more. That's one of the primary values which we'll learn about. And so since on Shabbos you need your house key and you don't need your car key, your house key is actually considered more chashuv when Shabbos starts, and your key ring would therefore be considered primarily there for the house key, which is permitted to be moved. So you'd be allowed to move your key ring with a car key ignition on it because it is determined, its status is based on your house key, which is permitted. But we'll learn about that more when we get to buses. So we finished off, we're at the very end of the applications last week, so we'll just pick up with this. Again, we're in the category of klishim lachto l'isser, the category of those things which are primarily forbidden. So on the top of page 4, so we had a bunch of examples which we threw in there. This is where we sort of got stuck at the end of last week. So toy musical instruments whose purpose is to play music. Pens, staplers, umbrellas, all of those items, their primary usage for something which you cannot do on Shabbos. Toothbrushes, now this is where the question came up. Someone came over to me running last week. You generally cannot brush your teeth on Shabbos with your regular toothpaste. But if you just, a toothbrush is in itself a kli shalachus because its primary use is to do something which you can't do on Shabbos. But it has permissible usages if you're not using toothpaste, or they make a special Shabbos toothpaste, which there are poskim who say that you could use. So if you did that, so then your toothbrush would be okay. But generally, it would be muksa under a category of a kli shalachus. So if your toothbrush was just lying on your sink, and you don't like it there because you think it's Shabbos, it should be put away, it's actually muksa. You're not allowed to just move it just for the sake of putting it away, because the primary purpose of the toothbrush is to do something which is prohibited on Shabbos. And therefore, unless you needed the toothbrush, or you needed its place that it's in, you couldn't move it. We learned last week that you can create needs for things. So if you created a need for its place, or you created a need why you need a toothbrush, you could move it. But as it is, right there, the toothbrush is a kli shalachus iser and would be considered muksa. Similarly, hairbrushes, which most hairbrushes, unless they're the special kind that you can use on Shabbos, I'm sure all of you know much more about that than I do, but the one that you can use on Shabbos would be considered muksa. Bikes are in that category. All those things which, again, if you needed it for a permitted use or just in the way, you can move it, but otherwise it would have a status of muksa. The game of Scrabble. So this is we briefly got into last week. Also, Scrabble is prohibited because of the gzeira shema yichtav. You might come to write any game. Most games are not muksa on Shabbos. We'll talk about that in a minute. But any game which generally is played by writing something down is also to play on Shabbos, no matter what you hold about playing games on Shabbos. Normally, that is for sure prohibited because we're afraid you're going to come to write. And Scrabble, which is a game which is usually score is kept, and you need to sort of write down to keep track of the score. So Scrabble is a problem of Shema Yichtov, and therefore becomes muksa. So if your Scrabble game is lying around, you'd not be allowed to move it unless, of course, you needed the place that it is in, Sarach Makomo, and then you'd be allowed to move it. But otherwise, the game of Scrabble would fit into this category and would be muksa. Now, Scrabble sometimes has another problem, is what we just started mentioning, when the deluxe edition, which has actual ridges or slots where you put the pieces into, that becomes a problem of ksiva. You're actually writing. That becomes permanent enough for Meisher Paskin that that's actually a ksiva problem. You're a violation of one of, not just a gzeira, of a rabbinic prohibition that you might come to write. If you play Scrabble in your deluxe editions, that's actually a much bigger problem, and that would be muksa, obviously, as well. Same thing with the jigsaw puzzles. Anything that's for older children or for adults has the same ksiva problem. You're putting together shapes and pictures and words and letters and all sorts of different things is also a problem of ksiva, and therefore the puzzles are considered muksa for that same reason. Now that's all assuming, as we'll talk about in a minute, that the puzzle is made for either older children who are old enough to know about the laws of Shabbos or for adults, but therefore their primary use is prohibited on Shabbos. Okay, that was all a summary of last week. Yeah.
Let's say you have something that you're going to need its place, like guests are coming, but they're not there yet. In other words, if you can move something because you need its place, does it have to be right before you need it? Like with, if you're broken, or can you do it like, when you clean up
really? I don't know. I would assume that would be fine. And you need its place because...
You need its place later on.
Yeah, and if you're doing it on Friday for Shabbos day, maybe. I don't know. I don't know if it applies to the same laws like order. I'm not sure. I didn't mention anything about that, but I'm not sure. I have to look into that. No, that's the leniency, that when you need its place or you need it, you can move it in a direct manner without any type of shinoyim. So the other things which we'll learn about, what you can't move, like the first category we learned about, which we'll chazer over in a few minutes, that which is inherently muksa, it has no purpose. It's a stone, it's a rock, it's just you can't use anything. It has no purpose on Shabbos. There, if you needed to move it, you'd have to, which we'll learn about, come up with alternate ways of moving, and you couldn't move it directly. The leniency of this category of the klishim left to listen, when you sit down, you say, okay, what category is this in? Its primary use is something prohibited, but I need its place, or I need it for a permitted usage, you could just pick it up and move it and put it wherever you want. That would be okay. That is the leniency of that category. Alright, I'd like to try to cover, I don't think we will, three new categories, or three different categories of things tonight. Let's start with what's on your sheet, page 4, category 3, which of course really should be category 4. Kli shemalachto leheter. That which is totally permitted to use, it's classified as something which has a permitted use, and you're allowed to move it as you need. So it's pretty much simple, but I just want to work through some of the applications just so you should be familiar with, because some of them are actually surprising as far as being mutter to move on Shabbos. So the simple definition is any utensil that is used primarily for something that is permitted on Shabbos. So that if we look at whatever it is that's in front of us, and its primary use is something that you're allowed to do or move or use it on Shabbos, and then that will define this particular utensil as something which is a kli shemalachta v'heter, a utensil of a permitted use, and you can move it on Shabbos. You don't have to worry about muksa, you can do what you need for it. Simple examples, chairs, clothing, bedding, house keys, all of those things that are totally fine to be used on Shabbos, you're allowed to move them. Now, you're not allowed to move them for no purpose whatsoever. The sages, Chazal, still prohibited just moving it if you just wanted to Shabbos afternoon. It's the summer months, you have these long afternoons, and you just want to rearrange a room because this is a good time, that you still could not do. But outside of those, if you ever needed it, that by definition means that it's for some purpose and you'd be allowed to move it. Now, the general rule as far as children's toys is as follows, that any child's toy that he may play with, or she, even though an adult could not, meaning that the toy would be, if it was just an adult around, would be a muksa. You couldn't use it, you're not allowed to play with it on Shabbos because it's electronic, it makes noise, or whatever it may be, but the child who it is geared for is at an age where they're not up to that yet. They don't know about Shabbos, they're too young, 3 or 4, whatever the age would be. Then that toy is not defined as muksa because its primary use is mutter on Shabbos. You do not need to prevent the child from playing with it. And it's made for that child. So since the toy is made for a child who's of an age that he's going to use it even on Shabbos, that will define the toy as not being muksa because its primary use is permitted on Shabbos. Now the rule in general is you're not allowed to hand such a toy to a child, but if a child is playing with it, there's absolutely no requirement to remove the toy or remove the child from the toy, even though it is muksa. You might be tempted to do that because it's giving you a headache at your Shabbos table with all the noise and the bells and whatever it is that's going on, but from a halachic perspective, a child that age does not need to be removed from the muksa toy, and that therefore creates the toy not to be muksa, which we will see has all sorts of positive connotations for us trying to clean up our houses on Shabbos afternoon. So some applications of this. So watches. This is not just applications of the child's toys, just general applications of this. Your watch is not considered muksa on Shabbos, because you're allowed to wear a watch, you're allowed to use a watch on Shabbos, even though it might have a battery in it, and even though it can't set it, but its primary use is considered, it's fine to use on Shabbos, and therefore, it's not muksa. You're allowed to carry, take off your watch, move it, whatever you need to do, it's not a muksa utensil. Now, if it's stopped, this is where the shiloh always comes in. What happens if a watch is broken on Shabbos? So this is where you have to determine, depending on the type of watch it is, whether or not it could still be classified as jewelry. Now that it's no longer functioning as a watch, so it would become muksa, because it's purpose, you can't use it, it's broken. Unless it's that kind of quality watch that you would wear, even if it's broken, just because it sort of fits with the outfit you're wearing. It's a nice piece of jewelry, it's a fancy watch. If it is of that type, then it's not considered muksa, because this is no different than any other piece of jewelry that you would wear that's not considered muksa. But if it's a type of watch that when it breaks during the week, you would take off, because what are you going to do with a broken watch like this, then it does become muksa on Shabbos. That is the general as far as that goes. This is assuming you have an Erev. If you don't have an Erev, that becomes a whole different discussion, which is not a muksa discussion. But as far as muksa goes, that would be the general application and rule. Now, all sorts of games, toys, games, blocks, balls, baseballs, tennis balls, ping pong balls, all sorts of that stuff. So Rabbi Bonner, when he brings this all down in his Sefer, so he has a whole little disclaimer. He says, I'm not discussing whether or not it is appropriate or not appropriate to play ball on Shabbos, whether or not you should, and at what age. I'm not getting into that. I'm just talking about whether or not it's considered muksa. And since these items are permitted, al fi halacha, there's no prohibition against playing any of these games or any of these toys. So therefore, none of them are considered muksa. And if your children did not do a good job cleaning up, you are allowed to clean up certainly after them. They are not muksa. You could use them, play with them, whatever is necessary on Shabbos. Now, following on what we discussed about children's toys, so, and this is an issue which I always was, for a long time, confused about. These whistles, toy phones, talking dolls, musical toys and rattles, things like that, generally for an adult are all prohibited. You're not allowed to play with those toys that make noise. These talking dolls that would be considered mukzah. All of those things set off some type of electrical circuit, which would be prohibited for an adult to be engaged with. But almost all of those toys, and it depends on exactly how the toy was made and for what age it is geared at, any of those toys which is geared at a child of an age who isn't holding by Hilchos Shabbos and doesn't know why, they're just not ready, they're not there yet, those toys are not considered mukzah. A rattle, for example, so you know how to rattle which shakes, you know how to make noise with the shaker on Shabbos, but if it's for a child, a little baby, an infant, so that it doesn't make it mukzah. And as well as all of these things, the talking dolls, the talking dolls, the musical toys, and the phones, all of those things, when they are made for the young children, are not mukzah, and you are allowed to move them and put them away. A question? Some dolls are made for older children, older girls or boys, whatever they are. That is dependent on the situation as to whether or not its primary use would be for a child that in your home knows it's not supposed to play with this on Shabbos. As soon as you hit that age, then that toy will be classified as mukzah because it's now a klisha malach tola, so its primary use is something prohibited on Shabbos, and you could only move it if you needed it or if you needed its place. But for the younger children's toys, they are not mukzah. Now, you need to be careful that when you move it, you don't set off whatever it is that it does. That's a whole separate... That's not a mukzah problem. That's a problem of Hilchos Shabbos. You're not allowed to complete the circuit which creates whatever it is that it's creating, be it the noise or the music or whatever it is.
It's not like a rattle. I mean, it's not really electronic or something, but I mean, if you move it, it's very likely that it's
going to
make a noise.
So, yeah, moving a rattle, you'd have to be careful. I mean, you can move a rattle without having it make a whole lot of noise. Pretty, and if you're careful with it, if it's in the way. So that is the. So you have to know the toys. You have to know your children's toys when they're lying around. Whether or not moving them will always set them off, or whether or not you can move them without setting them off. But this is certainly, in my experience, a common misconception that any little toy that's on the floor, which generally makes noise, is mukzah. Not necessarily true, provided that the toy, which it often is made for younger children. As long as when you move it, you're not going to set it off, you'd be allowed to move it out of the way. Yeah?
I'm just talking about the definition of a rattle. If you're talking about a rattle that has like huge beads inside, nothing electronic, no circuit things, is that in a different category than one that has a ton of electronics?
No. There's a separate problem with making noise, creating noise like that on Shabbos. So that even if it's not electronic, it's a problem. The same problem with a door knocker. Using a door knocker on Shabbos. That's a separate problem. No, because I'm not prepared to know, because it's off the out of the front. We can get. Okay, moving on. Binoculars, microscopes, telescopes. These things are, believe it or not, all mutter on Shabbos. There's no problem with using any of those things on Shabbos, and therefore they would be considered entirely mutter to move, unless they fall into the other category, which we've introduced but not really spoken about, which is mukzah machmas chisaron kit, where if it's such a valuable object that you would not use it under, your fancier binocular or microscope or telescope almost always will fall under that, but sometimes you have the children's version, that's obviously for sure okay, but even if it's your version and you wouldn't be so careful, you wouldn't mind if your children played with it, that's unlikely that that's the case. Brooms, you're allowed to use a broom on Shabbos, so that's obviously not mukzah. Artificial plants and flowers are not mukzah. Now, I did not add here, and I wish I had, because it's important, but we should all include the shiloh which comes up at every Shabbos table, are your regular flowers that you have on the table in water. What's the status with those? So those are also under this category of a klisha malach tola heter. It is the utensil of permitted use, because they're just there for decorations. There's nothing happens. Once they're put in the water before Shabbos, there is nothing prohibited about them, and you are allowed to move them. They are under no restrictions as far as that goes. I spoke with Rabbi Pransky this afternoon about it. I had thought that there might have been some level of restrictions when you needed to move it. He was under the impression that they are totally fine. There's absolutely nothing wrong with moving them for any purpose whatsoever. They are under this category. Once they're in the water and they've been cut, they're totally fine. Now, yeah? Yeah.
So an electronic handheld game is made for an older child, but like a 4 or 5 year old kid gets hold of it. Right.
So what
status is that?
So if we break it down, so the toy would have the status of a kli shemalachto le'iser, because the toy's primary use is for an older child who should know not to use it on Shabbos. And therefore that would define the toy as a kli shemalachto le'iser, which means you could only move it if you needed it, which you don't, because it's prohibited, or if you needed its place, which you might. But if the younger child takes it, or even an older child, let's say a younger child takes it, you're not required. I'm assuming if it's a child, if you're fighting with him, he's probably not really ready. That is your definition, that he's not old enough to know about it, unless, you know, he's 9, 10 years old fighting with him still. But a younger child who's you're not able to reason with, so then you're not obligated to remove it from him. Even though, because it's really an older child's toy, that's where that difference would be. In other words, a child that was made for this 4 or 5 year old would be a kli shemalachto leheter, and then you can move it just because you want to clean up. I don't need its place. I just don't like it where it is. I can move it. But if it's made for an older child, so then since he really shouldn't use it on Shabbos and he knows not to use it on Shabbos, that will then define the toy as a kli shemalachto leheter, a utensil which is generally prohibited, and then you could only move it if you needed the place that it's in right now, not just for the sake of cleaning up somewhere. Yeah?
Are all brooms okay, or only the ones you don't have natural...
Brooms are okay as long as there's no concern that it would break.
The fiber.
Yeah. I don't know what most brooms are made of today, whether or not that's a problem or not a problem, but I think a lot of them are synthetic, right? Mm-hmm. Most? Some are still straw. And you have to, and also, most brooms, there's a major, major discussion throughout all of the halacha about sweeping on Shabbos, because it used to be that the floors that they had were dirt, and when you sweep up a dirt floor, you smooth it out, and that's all sorts of problems. But we don't really have those kinds of floors anymore. I mean, their floors are pretty solid. You're not going to create any holes or smooth out any, that's usually not an issue with the type of floors that we had. If you were sweeping outside a sukkah's time, then you start having some issues. But even then, usually it's on concrete or... But generally, inside a house, it's not going to be a problem.
I know that some reason you file in the shop, but you can't put the file in the water.
Right.
Can you accept the file to accept the plant?
So that's like accepting any gift. You're only allowed to accept a gift on Shabbos if it's Litzorach Shabbos, if you need it for Shabbos. So I think that normally would be a problem. You'd have to have in mind that you're not really accepting it. In other words, they could bring it into your house, but you could say, in your mind, it's not mine, I'm not taking it. There are all sorts of the classic stories of people who often host people who don't know not to bring flowers on Shabbos. You have a vase of like marbles in it or something, where you just stick it in, have them put it in, they don't realize that you're not putting it in water, but you can't really... If it's not a food item, you can't really accept it on Shabbos. A food item, you're allowed to bring food as a gift on Shabbos because that fits into Tzarech Shabbos. It's a necessary, you're going to use it or you could use it on Shabbos. Yeah, that I don't know. That recently came up in my house the other week. I was like, you can, do you have to? I remember hearing once that you did, but I'm not sure whether or not you have to open up every bottle of wine. Sometimes you get 3 bottles of wine on a Shabbos. I don't know that you have to open up. I don't even know anything about that. I don't know.
You don't have to use it.
Thank you. I was... So it has to be something which is usable for Shabbos, but apparently you don't have to use it. Right. But the flowers, you can't. So then I can't make a kinyan. I can't make an acquisition of something on Shabbos, which... Yeah, you just tell them to put it down and then you have to sort of deal with it then. But as far as mukzah, if on your house, on your Shabbos table, you have flowers in the middle of the table, in water, that's not mukzah, and you can move it off the table because you want to see the person on the other end, and you can move it back to the table if you don't want to see the person at the other end. That's all fine. Okay. Safety pins, toothpicks, magnets, Shabbos, what? All of those things are totally fine. They all have permissible usages on Shabbos, and therefore... they are fine to move. Now the Shabbos blech, that's not on the fire beforehand. The Shabbos blech we just have lying around, which you need to move, or for whatever reason, that's all okay. Those are all utensils. So anytime you have utensils in front of you, you basically just go to the what is its primary use, and if it's something which is permitted, then it's totally fine. If it's something which is primarily forbidden, so then you only would be allowed to move it, at least in the normal manner, if you need its place or you need it itself. They are not, because the way most posts can hold, the way that you use a safety pin is permitted on Shabbos. And if you go to these Shabbatones or things, you'd be allowed. Because what a safety pin does, it doesn't rip or change the material, it just pokes through the holes in material. The most pieces of clothing, the way that the safety pin works is, you could look at it afterwards, it just pushed aside the threads to get in. That usage, in other words, I think you might be right, that usage would be prohibited. But the use of a safety pin doesn't necessarily, I guess, this is, I guess, depends on how you define its primary use. If that's the way that you always use safety pins in your home, then that would, I would imagine that would then define it as a klishin lachta lisser. But safety pins themselves, which aren't just to hold things together in a way which might be like sewing, if you use it to attach your name tag, is permitted on Shabbos. That you're allowed to use those things on Shabbos. So this is Rabbanu. He put it in the category of klishin lachta lisser. I assume that's, I guess, how he understood most of them were used. But like many of these things don't have an objective. If it's primarily used for something prohibited, so then that would become that. But so he held that safety pins were not the way. If that's how you always use safety pins, then I would agree with you that I would not be so quick to move them. Yeah. I'm going to put a blech on Shabbos. So the blech is not muksa.
It's not, I thought you said that you couldn't. I thought you just said you couldn't.
No, assuming the blech was just in your cabinet, so it's not muksa. So you want to know if you could put it on top?
Put it on the plank.
I don't think it would be a problem.
Okay. Even if the next day I wanted to use it, assuming it was gas, so
Yeah, I'm feeling. You want to use it?
Or would
you,
yeah. The next day, so then you have the blech on the plane. So could you then, you couldn't use it that time?
Because why? Has to be garbage called them before Shabbos?
Because she wouldn't be able to prepare food on that. She wouldn't be able to put a food directly
on Shabbos.
No, but
that
would be like cooking.
No,
without
the blech anyway.
So
what I'm saying, there's a part of it, like diagonal. Mm-hmm.
I don't remember. I'm only muxing now. That's a judicial shayla. I don't know. You can't do that before on Shabbos? I have to look it up. I don't remember. You're asking questions in the kitchen are always. I'm trying to keep out of the kitchen as much as I can. I'll look it up. Anyone? I don't know. Anyone have any opinions? Putting a block on a Shabbos?
I think she can put the block on Shabbos, but I don't think she can use it on Shabbos.
No, the first thing you say was to protect the flame.
Right.
But the reason why you want to put the block on is that no one should hurt themselves. And then you want to take something out of it if you want to then actually use it on Shabbos. I don't remember. Consensus is no here, but I have to look it up. I don't remember. I have to look at it. I don't remember. Anyone have any opinions? I don't remember? No? No? I will take note. Okay. Any other questions on so far? What is it? These two? All right. Let's go to section 5, the top of page 5. Edible and inedible foods. What's that? Yeah, I got plenty of them.
Anyone
else need a page 5? All right, so those are the three main categories that we've discussed so far. Has been a muksa machmas gufo, that which is inherently muksa because it has no purpose on Shabbos. The stones, your sticks, your items which have no use for you have no use for them on Shabbos, and those cannot be moved and in the normal manner under any circumstance. We've discussed klishim lachto l'isser, that which primary use is something which is prohibited, and we discussed klishim lachto l'hetzer, that which is primary use is something which is permitted. In the discussion of isser machmas gufa, that which is inherently usser, we said any food item, by definition, always is permitted. Any food item is always okay. Any food item will never be considered muksa. But if it is a food item which is inedible, so then that will create a problem and that will still remain muksa because you can't do anything with it on Shabbos. So the question always is, how do we define edible and inedible foods on Shabbos as far as that which is considered muksa or not? So the rule, as I just mentioned, is that anything edible is automatically considered prepared or designated. Again, the definition of muksa is something which is set aside, out of your mind, out of your intention of using on Shabbos. Any food item, by definition, you have in mind. Whether or not you were particularly thinking about this food item in your pantry, it doesn't matter. If it's food and it's edible, it's considered inherently prepared for use on Shabbos because anybody can use it. Anybody can eat it. Now, if anyone who has animals, similarly, any food which is fit for an animal is also not considered muksa. In the times of the Gemara, so this was a much larger discussion where everybody had either domesticated or farm animals, so it included a lot more types of food or leftover types of products. We don't have those kinds of animals outside of your maybe dogs or cats. But anything which could be eaten by a dog or a cat, if you own one, is not considered muksa. And even if you don't own one, if it's common enough in your community, then that will also allow that food to not be considered muksa. If, I don't know if we would have enough animals in our community to, that should be applicable, but certainly if you have an animal, that gives you a little bit of added room. Any food which is permitted for that animal or is food is not considered muksa. Okay, but as far as human food, here are your applications. Raw eggs. Now, raw eggs are sometimes eaten in that manner, raw eggs. People like singers or other people, it's not very common, but enough that in halacha is classified as something which is not muksa because of the ability to eat them raw. Most of us don't do that, but there are certainly well-documented reasons why people do. So because it is an edible food as it is, the eggs in your refrigerator are therefore not considered muksa, and if you need the item behind it, it's not a problem to move or to adjust or to move to the downstairs fridge or the upstairs fridge, whatever you need to do with it, it's not considered muksa, it's considered a prepared food, even though most of us would certainly not, I shouldn't even say that, maybe somebody out here does eat raw eggs. But in any case, it's an edible type of product and therefore it's not considered muksa. As opposed to your raw meats or fish, those are not eaten. They're just, we don't do that. It's not even people who like to sing and other have other reasons don't eat that. And therefore, would be considered muksa. Now, the ramifications of that are your raw meat or fish that it's in a freezer is muksa. So that if you need something behind it, you're not allowed to move that. It's not, remember, the only heter, the leniency of moving something because you need its place, was the category of a klisha malachto le'isser, something which is primarily prohibited. And there the sages gave us a leniency, but if you need it, or you need its place, I need the hammer to open up the coconut, or I need the hammer because it's in the way of the safer that I want on my shelf, so I'm allowed to move it. But a food item which is not edible over Shabbos is therefore a muksa machmas gufo. It's in the first category of inherently muksa, and therefore you have to be careful not to move that around. Now the exception to this is either if it's some, there are some types of salted fish or herrings or maybe your pets, if you have one, eats raw food. If you do have that situation, then that would allow you to have the raw food not be considered muksa. But if it is, if you don't have that situation, then raw meats and fishes are considered muksa. Now, what about uncooked foods? Uncooked foods. So any food which cannot be eaten in its present state is muksa if it's in the present state and one which you cannot change on Shabbos. Meaning you need to bake whatever it is in order to make it edible, and you're not allowed to bake on Shabbos. So therefore, any uncooked food which is in a state right now which cannot be eaten, and there's nothing that you can do about it on Shabbos to get it to an edible state, would be considered muksa. Therefore, your rice, your beans, your flour, yeast, dough, spaghetti, all of those items in your boxes, in your pantry, are considered muksa because they are inedible in the state that they are in right now, and as such, you can't do anything about it on Shabbos. They are muksa and can't be moved. Similarly, your mashed potato mixes, your cake mixes, your popping corn, all of those things which you can't eat as they are right now, are muksa. Now, vegetables. So, there are different types of vegetables, and I'm getting into issues here which, again, I'm speaking to a bunch of women, so I am hoping that you'll correct me on anything that I'm saying wrong here, but vegetables which are always cooked, a potato, you can't eat a raw potato, it's just not done. I've seen people eat raw sweet potatoes, but your regular white or yellow, whatever, those potatoes, you don't eat them raw. So therefore those potatoes are considered muksa. Now we have to keep this in mind when we get to the sugya of basis. The potatoes in your drawer, if you have one of those, your vegetable drawer, all the potatoes in there are muksa, and we'll have to talk about how that will affect the nature of your whole drawer. But we'll get to that. But generally, so your potatoes will be muksa, but if it's sometimes eaten raw and sometimes eaten cooked, so I think I said that backwards. Any vegetable is always eaten cooked, is what I meant to say. A potato which is always eaten cooked and is not eaten raw. I assume everybody understood what I meant with that. But if it's sometimes eaten raw and sometimes eaten cooked, so then they will not be considered muksa, regardless of the reason why you particularly bought them. So even though you always eat your cauliflower, your spinach, or your mushrooms, your peas, your string beans, or the like cooked, because there are many people who don't, when you throw them into a salad raw, or you, however, there are ways to eat them and eat them in which they are not cooked, we'll define it as non-muksa. And on yontiv, it is worth noting that none of these things are going to be considered muksa, because on yontiv, so you're allowed to cook, so therefore you're allowed to transfer any of these things into a state which is edible, since you can cook, and therefore all of these food items will not be considered muksa on yontiv.
As a Passover Seder at the house that I go to each year, they use raw potatoes for the vegetables. I choose parsley, but they use raw potatoes.
They eat it raw?
Yeah, a lot of people do.
Really?
Yeah, they came from Germany, I think. But it's cut up raw potatoes, parsley,
they were married. All right. Well, Pesach is also yontiv. So yontiv is, you're just bringing me, a proof that sometimes, do they ever eat that during the year? Outside of,
no,
for Pesach?
I doubt it.
All right, so maybe for them it would be different. But for most of us, that would certainly be considered muksa. Yeah?
I guess, I don't know, but let's say you have something in the freezer, you need something else, can you move it indirectly? In other words, can you reach for the thing you want, even on the muksa?
Right, so indirect movements. We're going to talk exactly about the indirect movement. Then in terms of moving it now with your hands, with either an elbow or with using some other item to move it, But as far as just being able to move it aside, that's where if you had a frozen meat package in your freezer, that would be considered muksa, and you could not just move the frozen meat package.
Something like peas, like smoked peas or snap peas, can they open it even separately? Doesn't the separate the Shabbos? They pop it open and cook one at a time.
That's how you wanted to eat them?
Is
that... Are there, I don't think that would be considered like schita, or when you're opening up with your hand and you're picking out the ones that you want. So as far as boiler goes, you'd be fine.
Yeah, just opening up the...
Is that how they normally eat?
We usually eat the
pot
also.
No, some people open it.
There's one possibility there'd be a problem in terms of a schita of being toilet shit from. I don't think it's a problem. I'll confirm that also. Let me put it on my list. Okay, moving on. D. So your shells, peels, pits, all of those things are obviously non-food items, and therefore when they're on your table, they are muksa. Now, this we'll have to get to in section 6, which we'll hopefully get to in Hashem still tonight, that if they are repulsive, or they're in an offensive manner, or you'd be embarrassed for them if somebody saw them, then you can move them. But just as they are, it's important to know, they are inherently muksa, because they're not edible, they serve no purpose, and therefore once you've used them and you've peeled your orange, or your, you have your shell, your pits, all of those things would be considered muksa. Canned food. So Rav Moshe has a very interesting tshuva about canned food. Now canned food is a problem because you can't really get to it on Shabbos. You can't open the can. It's a big discussion. Many poskim hold you can't open a can on Shabbos. Says Rav Moshe, even according to the poskim hold, that you can't open a can on Shabbos because the food inside is accessible, either in opening it, the can in a destructive manner, or having a non-Jew open the can for you. So he holds, therefore, by definition, all canned food, as long as the food that's in the can is edible and doesn't need to be cooked, then that would be the other problem, obviously, because it's not edible because you can't cook. But prepared food in cans would not be considered muksa, so if you have to move things around in your cabinet, your canned foods would be fine. The other big issue is frozen foods. So Rav Bandar writes as follows on frozen foods. Any food which is frozen that you could defrost, and in its defrosted state would be ready to be eaten, meaning you have a frozen challah that's already been baked, or a frozen kugel, or your frozen bagel, all of those issues are not muksa, even as they are frozen, because you're allowed to defrost it on Shabbos and eat it. So that when Shabbos starts, it's all considered in the category of prepared, even though right now it's not in a prepared state because it's frozen. Even though, again, you could always sort of nibble on it, even in usually in its frozen state. But because you're allowed to defrost it and eat it, so then all of those items are not considered muksa. So it's absolutely no problem taking out a frozen challah to use as lacha mishnah, or if you have a frozen kugel and you want to defrost it to eat for shalosh shittos. All of those things are fine, even though they're frozen now, but they're not considered inedible. Inedible is where you need to cook it or do something which is prohibited on Shabbos in order to get it into an edible state. Frozen foods are not a problem, unless of course it's again a raw meat, because then you have to cook it. Right.
Can you open a canned food machine?
I don't know. Cans are a big. I'm not prepared to talk about that in terms of. There generally, if you open it in a way that would destroy the can, meaning that you're not creating the problem with opening a, one of the problems with opening a can is that you're creating a kli. You're now creating that which is now sealed, and you're making it into a usable vessel. You could empty it, you could use it. So if you opened it in a way that it didn't create that because you destroyed it, you opened it from the bottom and from the top, and it's no longer, then you'd be allowed to do that. In your tuna fish can, you couldn't open it in a normal manner because now you've created a new kli. So you have to open it in a way that you destroy it while you're opening it. So that's all part of why Rav Moshe says it's not muksa, because you could get around, you could figure out, you could. Sometimes the old grape juice, now they make the grape juice, and you can poke a hole in the top of your grape juice cap so that when it comes off, the harder plastic ones you can't do that with. But that's just, the old ones you could do that in terms of, or the sparkling grape juice that sometimes you get. You can't open it in a way that you created a clay. Open a can.
I mean,
in a normal manner.
In a normal manner.
Yeah, the can is the big, as I'm saying. There are two issues with cans. One is a bonet, which is considered building. Is it considered a bonet? And the second problem of when you're making it into a utensil where before it was sealed and now it's, and that also depends on how they make the can. One of those big issues, which is a whole discussion, which I'm not getting into. I always point out, some say you can, so you can, even though so you can, if you open it in a way where it destroy it, then you're still okay. At the end of the day, as far as muksa goes, which is all that it's not going to be muksa because either there are ways to open it or you could have an anju open it. It's one of those things in which, as far as Hilchos muksa goes, when you want to get to something behind the can, so when you're talking in your freezer and you got raw meat, the raw meat's muksa. You know how to move the raw meat. You have to work around that. When it comes to a can, regardless, it's not muksa. As far as opening cans, again, that is a much larger discussion, which I am going to take the fifth on. Tonight, at least. It'll be next. Hopefully, this will be a long-standing Shabbos series, and we can cover lots of different stuff. But just as far as muksa goes, not muksa. All right. Let's quickly see if we can finish this last little section. It's short. We'll finish off. Repulsive items. Graf shel re'i. So this is a leniency in hilchos muksa. Anything that is repulsive. Chazal basically said, as far as human dignity trumps this drabanan takana, this rabbinic concept of muksa, that if the human dignity is at stake, they never made any gzeira and they permitted you to move that which is offensive or repulsive and is going to destroy your ability to either be involving your own dignity or to enjoy your shamus experience. And therefore, either repulsive, foul-smelling things which would otherwise have been muksa are not considered muksa for that circumstance and you're allowed to remove it. Now, the requirements are as follows. A, this only applies when the item is currently in one's living quarters. It has to be that it is disturbing you now where you are, and not it's not in your attic, it's not in your garage. If it's already in a place that's not in where you generally are, then you don't have an ability to move it. But assuming in normal situations it's in your house, it's in your porch, it's in your hallway, or it's in a path that you need, and it's disturbing you there because it's offensive, you are allowed to move it. Now, it doesn't matter how small the item is or where in the room it is. In other words, for example, we said if something's in the corner, let's say you have a hammer in the corner of the room. So a hammer is a klisha malach talis, or its primary use is something prohibited. But you don't like it in the corner room because you want the house to be neat on Shabbos. So that you can't just move because you don't need it, and you don't need its place. It's just, you don't like it there. That's moksa. You can't move it for that purpose. But if it's a graf shel ri'i and it's off in the corner, but it's disturbing you, its presence is offensive, so then you are allowed to move it because of its either foul-smelling or otherwise repulsive presence. Now, Ravana writes what to me was a chiddush in letter B, that it does not have to be necessarily foul-smelling, which is a general way that a graf shel ri'i is classified. Anything which makes your living quarter, in his words, sloppy, would also be allowed to be removed. It is something which is in this category of something which the sages did not decree muksa on. How do you define that? So he says the post can define that as something which, if you were to have a guest walk in, you would be embarrassed by its presence. This is something which makes your house look unkempt, and it's embarrassing to be there. So, for example, here you have nutshells all over the table. You have a bunch of guys, the yeshiva guys have come over for lunch, and they're just nuts. It's just a mess. So somebody would come, it looks disgusting. So it's not foul smelling. It's not offensive in the sense that, like, if they're dirty, it's garbage. It looks unkempt. It looks disgusting. You'd be embarrassed for somebody to walk in. So that is within the category of graf shel ri'i. You'd be allowed to clear the table of your nuts and dispose of them. Now, ideally, as for many of these circumstances, a non-Jew would be, should be used. But if possible, you can use it directly. I mention that just because sometimes it is possible to do that, but under most circumstances where it's not possible, you don't have a non-Jew available. So then under these circumstances where it's repulsive, you're allowed to move it.
Can you have a non-Jew directly?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Sometimes you can ask them directly to move it. In other words, whenever there's something that you yourself could do if necessary, so then you can ask the non-Jew to do it also directly. Because if he's not around, I'm going to do it myself. So therefore it doesn't have... The prohibition of asking a non-Jew to do something is where you can't benefit from what he's doing. Because for you it's prohibited, so you can't benefit from him doing it for you. But if you're allowed to do it yourself, we just want to ideally have somebody else do it, so then you could just ask him directly to move it. If that's possible, it's worth mentioning, but if it's not possible, you're allowed to move it yourself. Oh, hold on. Yeah, we're getting there. We're getting there. So a couple applications as they come up on your everyday average Shabbos. Food wastes. You have your bones, you have your shells, you have your peels. So we mentioned that they're inherently muksa. They now have no purpose. They're not an edible product, and therefore they're muksa. But if they are so numerous and or placed in a way that is disturbing or embarrassing, then you can move them directly and clear the table. So again, you have to use your, just you have to, whatever the situation calls for. Inherently they're muksa, but if these are items that if they're left in the way that they are, would be embarrassing to you to have them there, which I would say most of the times, you know, after a Shabbos meal, you look at your table and you'd be pretty embarrassed if somebody walked in, then you'll have to clear them off because they're all within this category, even though they inherently aren't foul smelling, but it's sloppy. It's under the category of that, and therefore, if it is in that way, they are disturbing, they're embarrassing, they can be moved directly. If it's not in that manner, you know, one of the kids peeled an orange, or you did, and it's on the counter, it's on the table, it's not in a place, and it is otherwise muksa. It has to be within this category of something that's either disturbing and or embarrassing. Unwashed pots and pans will almost always fall into that category. They actually begin to smell, as we mentioned in previous weeks, pretty quickly, and they certainly just don't look nice. You never would want somebody walking in, you have all your empty pots and pans. So therefore, that would also be allowed to move them aside for that reason. Diapers are allowed to move for that reason also. Diapers obviously would be considered muksa machmas gufa. They're inherently useless, purposeless, but they usually don't smell very nice. And therefore, you're allowed to move them directly. You don't need a shinoi because of the fact that they are graf shel ri'i. And the big ones comes up every week, garbage cans and garbage bags. And so here you have the following issue. The garbage itself is muksa. It's purposeless. Most of the things in the garbage bag, this is full, not an empty garbage bag, with already garbage in it, is usually all stuff which is considered muksa. Therefore, you want to clean the table, and it would be easier for you just to take the garbage and move it to the table. So you're not allowed to do that because the garbage is itself muksa. It is muksa machmas gufo. It has no purpose. It's useless. Everything in there is because you've discarded it, and it's not a whole item that you're going to ever recycle. So the garbage itself is muksa. Once the garbage begins to smell, so then you're allowed to move it because it is graf shel ri'i. Even if it hasn't smelled, once it's been filled, you're allowed to move it out. But you can only discard it. It is muksa. So wherever you're going to put it, once it's there and it's out of the way, it is muksa. So you have the sort of the dichotomy that you're not allowed to pick up the garbage bag and to move it into your dining room to make it easier for you to clear the table, because the garbage bag, as it's beginning to get full, is muksa. But once it's full, and garbage bags that are full almost always invariably either do already or will shortly begin to smell and will fall into that category of gashuri, they can be moved. It's worth noting as you pull it out in terms of tying it. You're not allowed to double knots. It's a separate issue of Shabbos. So the garbage bag with the ties, you're allowed to do a single tie, which usually doesn't hold, which is why you're allowed to do it. But you're not allowed to do the double, you know, tie it once and then tie it a second time. That's creating a permanent knot. So you can take it out, you can do a single one and then bring it down for every month. But can't do the double knot.
So let's say you have a lot of stuff on the table. Can you bring an empty bag to the table, fill it up, and then take it?
See, I don't think so, because once you start filling it up, now once you're filling it up, as soon as you begin to fill it up, it becomes a muksa. In other words, each thing that you're going to bring to the garbage bag is, I'm allowed to move because it's a graf shel ri, this dirty plate, or what I was discussing on my table, so I'm allowed to move it and discard it. But once you put it in the garbage, so now it's sitting there, makes the whole garbage bag muksa until you need to discard, unless you need to discard that, but then just to walk it around, you would not be allowed to do. No, a twister also, you can only twist once, which usually doesn't hold, again, which is why you're allowed to do it. You can't twist more than once. Untwisting is the same problem. If you have a challah bag, some of the bakeries have twists. You can't untwist it. You have to rip the bag. It's part of bonet. More than one twist, if it's just once, it's really almost nothing, but as soon as it's that second wraparound, you're not allowed to untie or tie it. I think it's part of bonet. I think so. I have to look at what I remember clearly that is a problem. I don't remember exactly which category it falls under. Yeah. I think that would be under E, which I was about to get to, sweeping a floor from the mess that you would be embarrassed about. It would also be fine. That's why you're allowed to sweep on Shabbos, because you're thinking about sweeping on Shabbos, everything on the floor is purposeless. What do I need it on the floor? And of course, it is purposeless, but the reason why you're allowed to sweep it up and discard it is because the reason why you're sweeping is because you don't want your house to look like it looks after a Shabbos meal. So it's embarrassing to leave it that way.
So it wouldn't go into category A, it wouldn't go into category E, because it's small enough.
If nobody else went, I'm assuming generally the reason why you're sweeping it up is because it's bothersome for you to be there, yeah. So it almost always will fall into that category. It would be, you know, rare the situation that you found something that you noticed and said, that's not a big deal. I mean, the reason you get it out of the way, because you don't like having, so I think today our houses are so much more, we're so much more careful with where our houses look than what was 100 or 200. We don't like things on the floor, even if it's a small amount. We notice it, and we want to get rid of it because we don't want people to walk in and see it that way. And lastly, I'll just throw this in, as Rabbi Prince is probably waiting outside, removing dead bugs. You are allowed. They are muksa, but they're also repulsive. And because they are repulsive, you are allowed to remove them on Shabbos because they all fit under the category of graf shel ri. When you have that dead roach in the corner there, that is certainly something which you are embarrassed about, and you are therefore allowed to remove.
You could do it in the show?
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like a diaper. It's no different than a diaper. Just like a diaper you could pick up and throw out in your garbage bag. A dead bug is repulsive to us today. Yeah, get rid of it. You can get rid of it. All right, so that was tonight. So that's moving. We'll move along, Mirz Hashem, next week to some other things. That's the edible and inedible foods, the repulsive items, and the kalim of permitted use. Maybe next week we'll start with a quick review of some of the different categories as we're going on. We have still to do buses, and we have to do muksa machmas chisaron kiss. Still, and then some isolated various halachos. Okay.